keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Seculo.
Hey, everybody, we're going to get to a discussion about a major case, but I've got a significant announcement to make, and that is the passing of our friend, founder, and mentor, Dr. Pat Robertson. Went to be with the Lord last night, early this morning, actually. I had the chance to be with Pat about 6-8 weeks ago with our chairman of the board of Regent University, another organization that Pat had founded. We spent some time with Pat, and it was a great time to be with him. I've known Pat Robertson for most of my professional legal career. He, as I said, he founded the American Center for Law and Justice. We met at a Holiday Inn in Chesapeake, Virginia, back in 1990. I just argued the Mergens case at the Supreme Court of the United States. And Pat said, let's form an organization, which he then did. And I joined as the chief counsel. And as I said, that was, my goodness, 33, 34 years ago. And we're going to continue that legacy. But this is a man who God used tremendously, both in my life, in the life of our organization, but also globally. Operation Blessing, CBN, the 700 Club, Superbook, the list goes on and on. These were all initiatives started by Dr. Pat Robertson. His wife, Dee Dee, passed away 2 years ago. She also was a very real way, a founder of CBN and the 700 Club. That's where you all know him most, of course, is from the 700 Club. He also ran for president, credibly ran for president in 1988 as a Republican, and came number two in Iowa and a couple of the other caucuses and primary states. So he's a man that's had tremendous influence, and he's going to continue to have that influence. We're praying, of course, for his family. I know this family very well. The ministries, the activities of CBN and Regent will continue. Of course, the ACLJ, we're in court today. That work will continue, which is exactly what Pat Robertson wanted to see. His ideal was to build a legacy for generations. Christian leadership to change the world is the touchstone of Regent University. Our main focus has always been to stay in the courts and stay engaged in public policy. Pat also formed the political organization, the Christian Coalition. So you look at all of these things that Pat started and the impact they had, it changed the face of politics. I mean, most of the major newspapers and other sources that are putting out information about Pat right now are saying that he changed the political landscape in the United States, as well as touching the spiritual lives of so many people. So again, from all of us, our prayers and thoughts with the Robertson family. There'll be a celebration of life service soon. We'll keep you posted on that. And again, I can't begin to tell you the impact that Pat Robertson had on me and our organization. He was a constant source of encouragement. I mean, this tremendous insight, Yale Law School graduate. So he had a very good understanding of the law. He went into business rather than pursuing a legal degree, a law practice. He worked for investment companies and then, of course, started with $70 CBN, one radio station in Chesapeake, Virginia. And now it's a global ministry touching lives, or you can't even count the number of countries that CBN's in. But again, our work at the ACLJ was founded by this great man, and our work at the ACLJ will continue. That's what we can do for Pat. What he would say is go to court. And as I said, I was with him just a couple of weeks ago, and he was, you know, this was a guy that we were praying for him. But the last thing he asked for was, how can I pray for you? And that's how he was. That's how Pat's whole ministry was. So again, from all of us, it's a huge thank you to this man, to his vision, and a prayer specifically for his family as they continue these important ministries here in the United States and around the globe. Our friend, our mentor, our colleague, Dr. Pat Robertson, with the Lord now, passed away early this morning. And again, what a joy to be part of that team at CBN. And we appreciate so much that ministry and know it will continue. We've got some very interesting developments in a case that we're working on. We're going to get to that, but I didn't want to start this broadcast out without sending our thoughts and prayers to Pat Robertson's family as he's transitioned to heaven. We'll talk to you coming out of this break. We'll be right back.
1-800-684-3110. We are fighting back, whether it is just absurd, the pornography forced to be read by a teenage student in a public school drama class where they had no choice. It wasn't the monologue that they wrote. But the teacher then, of course, the harassment that followed when the mother tried to go to the school board meeting and read just the monologue, that was shut off. And we're fighting back. And we'll get more into that. If you missed that last week, it's up at ACLJ.org. And a little bit later in the show, we can remind you about some of more of the facts there. I mean, there was even a contact made, like physical contact made against this teenage student. So the complaint is not only on the First Amendment issues, but even alleges assault and battery because of how the student was treated by the school, even after promises that they would not be, for instance, put in a room with only a male faculty member. They broke that promise, put in a room only with the teacher they were that they had an issue with. They broke that. They forced her to go to a room with that. She ends up in tears, and the assault and battery claim arises there because the teacher grabbed her, physically grabbed her. This is going on in our schools when someone speaks up and says, you know, this is embarrassing to me. I feel uncomfortable having to read something so sexually explicit that was not of my choosing. By the way, this was a, you know, pick it out of the hat and think about, you know, again, the other student being put in that position. We even heard from a parent who called into the radio show, and we're checking with them, and said that they had a student in the class. The students quit that class. So we're following up on that as well. But we have a new case, and you're going to notice more and more cases. We talk about the ACLJ fighting back against this cultural censorship of our views. This case, the new case, arises in Washington State at Fort Casey State Park, which is one of four Central Whidbey area state parks and is located on Whidbey Island in Island County, Washington. That's Washington State. Gary Formals is a retired U.S. Navy's chief and retired general contractor who's volunteered at the park for more than 10 years. His volunteer duties included checking in park visitors, answering questioning, monitoring campsite. In exchange for his duties, he was allowed to camp for free in the park for 3 months each spring and fall. In addition to volunteering his services at the park, he was also a part-time employee. As an employee, he worked on equipment as an equipment operator and groundskeeper for over 6 years. His work was recognized in 2019. He was awarded the Award of Excellence in Volunteer of the Year. The staff commended Gary for his service above and beyond the call of duty, his integrity, and his courteous and kind manner with everyone who meets him. Does that sound like somebody who was spouting off his political beliefs to everyone he met in Washington State at a park? Absolutely not. He has been described as indispensable. Another park representative explained that she doesn't know how we would run the park without him, to be honest. Now, when he was either serving as a volunteer employee, he wore a jacket with a state park emblem or a vest or hat. He never spoke about nor wore items expressing his religious or political beliefs to visitors in the park while fulfilling his host or other duties, both volunteer and paid. He drove his personal pickup truck to and from the park where he volunteered his service and worked as employee. Since 2016, so he got that award 3 years after 2016, he's displayed several bumper stickers on the back window of his truck. Some of those pictures include Trump stickers. Okay, like a lot of people who are a lot of veterans and a lot of people on their trucks display political stickers on their private vehicles. No issue for years. I mean, he got the Award of Excellence in 2019, so 3 years after those stickers went up. He even parks his truck so that visitors can't see the stickers in plain sight. When he's on duty as equipment operator, he parks his personal truck behind a shed and utilizes a park vehicle. He's not trying to slap a Trump sticker on that as right. well. So that's like what you were talking about, Logan. When he's doing park duties in a vehicle, he's using a park vehicle that has no political stickers at all, which is right and fine. At no time prior to April of this year, anyone ever told him to cover or remove his bumper stickers. Till April of this year. Okay, so time, 2023.
4 weeks ago.
And seven years ago is when he put the Trump stickers on his car, 2016. On April 3rd, 2023, a defendant in the case, one of the park again staff, forwarded an email that said, please remove the insurrectionist propaganda from Fort Casey campground. And then you see the staff saying, well, I don't even think this is a big deal. This is his private vehicle. And then they try to use their policy on not talking about politics and not utilizing politics to target his personal truck, which even some of the staff said they didn't believe was correct. But ultimately, he's given the ultimatum. Take off the stickers or quit volunteering and you lose your job. He chose to stand up for his First Amendment rights, that this is his private vehicle. He doesn't talk politics in his role as a volunteer or staff. He doesn't wear political things in his role as a volunteer or staff. He drives a park vehicle when he is on park duty, so he's not driving that personal vehicle. This is just how he gets to and from work, like so many of us do. And then there's a lot of people who drive to and from work and then get in another vehicle for work. We don't judge them based off what they have on their personal vehicle. They have a First Amendment right just like you and me. They shouldn't be banned from volunteering. People who get the award of excellence are now being shut down and called insurrectionists because they support the leading Republican candidate for president of the United States and a former president of the United States.
Because one person complained.
That's
what we got to remember. A lot of these things come from very few people. One person complained, it causes all of this chaos. And that's why we're here, though. That's why we support people, because we have clients like Gary, and we could have clients like you who are watching or listening right now, because maybe you've gone through something similar. I encourage you, if you have, go to aclj.org/help, because we can maybe help you out. And we do that at no cost.
That's right. So, and again, if you're in this kind of situation, it takes the Garys of the world who say, you know what, I'm not going to take those stickers off. I'm going to fight back because I believe my constitutional rights are being violated. I'm going to contact the ACLJ, and that's what he did.
Yep.
And we said, you know what? We also believe your constitutional rights are violated. You should be able to volunteer at that park. Most of the people that work at that park think you should be able to volunteer as well. You got the award of excellence after the stickers went on. So whatever policy they're talking about that you signed, they didn't have a problem with for 7 years. They didn't interpret it as applying to your personal vehicle until they got told by one visitor that you're an insurrectionist.
Yeah.
This is the classic case of trying to cancel us out of all aspects of culture. Even when we are just trying to volunteer in a state park that we pay for as taxpayers, that he pays for as a Washington state taxpayer, as a volunteer going beyond, above and beyond, as his award said, in service to the park, has had no complaints by any visitors ever before. In fact, people say he is gracious and kind. Doesn't ever, never accused of talking politics, and they try to shut him down. The choice is give up your private speech, or lose your job and your volunteer opportunity, and you don't get to stay at the campground anymore. So that is why we are representing Gary in this, again, atrocious abuse of a state policy that is so overbroad and is only, in our knowledge, has been used to shut down Gary because he happened to have a Trump sticker.
Right. I almost guarantee you would not go the other way around. I do have a interesting comment. People ask, well, how does this work if they do want help? Because we say it's at no cost. Well, the reason it can be at no cost is because people who also listen support this show. Support the ACLJ.
That's right. Oftentimes, these are cases that would be tough for a regular firm to take. Now, we partner with firms, and we have the resources that if we need to hire an attorney for a state matter, we can because of our donors. But these cases aren't necessarily provide enough revenue for a normal firm to be able to operate. So with a nonprofit organization, legal organization like the ACLJ, we can take the cases that preserve the core constitutional rights of Americans at no cost to them because of our donors, because you support the work of the ACLJ. This is an example of that work in action. Same thing goes for the case out of Nevada, representing the parents and the daughter forced to read that pornographic monologue in class, and then the way they were mistreated by the school. And then the school board saying that you can't, this is too obscene to read at the school board meeting, which was adults. So we're able to do this because of our donors. So if you don't have a case, but you want more people like Gary to speak up, to stand up and fight back, support the work of the ACLJ. Donate today at aclj.org. Let me encourage you as well. There's a horrendous Washington state law that goes into effect in July. This is a law that is redefined for teenage runaways. What is a condition that you would not contact the parents? And the two new conditions are an abortion So if the child wants to have an abortion and their parents aren't consenting to it, that would be a condition where you as the parent have lost control over your child, basically you've lost custody. Or if your child wants to begin a gender change. And these are minors. As young as 10 years old. If you have a young person in Washington State and you want to fight back and challenge that law, we encourage you to check out and contact us at aclj.org/help. And let me explain with the way we look at this. Again, this is enticement. This is saying, hey, run away and come to us if you want the sex change. Run away and come to us to get the abortion. We won't tell your parents. Contact us, aclj.org/help. By the way, on the show today, we're going to talk immigration. We're going to talk what's happening over the weekend. We're going to get into some of the news as well. Mike Pompeo is going to be joining us as well to talk about some of those issues, so you don't want to miss that. But we do want to focus on some of this ACLJ new work, new cases that have been filed, ones that we think you'd be particularly interested in our audience, whether you watch our broadcast or listen to the broadcast, especially if you are a donor to the ACLJ. It's your donor dollars in action representing these clients, standing up for their First Amendment rights, standing up against in Washington State cancel culture, in Nevada standing up for parental rights, and again against a 15-year-old forced to read what the school board called pornographic. You know, stop reading that. They told the mom, stop reading that. That's pornographic. That's obscene. But it's okay for a 15-year-old who didn't choose, by the way. Make matters worse, they didn't write that and choose, oh, I want to perform this. And then someone complained. No, they had to put their monologues in a hat, and they draw a random one, and then they had to memorize and perform that. So it caused emotional distress. And then how the school handled it was just horrendous. But we want to take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. Yep. We're also standing up for Gary, a military veteran volunteer in Washington State Parks, who was forced to quit because of Trump stickers on his truck. Personal truck. This is someone who in 2019 received their award of excellence. And guess when those stickers went up? 2016. Guess when they got their first complaint? 4 weeks ago. In 2023. But how long did it take for them to cancel Gary from his years of service to that park? A couple of weeks. And he's been canceled. But you know what he said? I'm not going to take the stickers down. I'm going to fight back. And I bet the ACLJ will fight back with me. And he was right. He contacted us at aclj.org/help. And an actual ACLJ attorney contacts you. And we then discuss it here internally and make sure that we are the right organization, that you've got the right situation for us to assist. And if we do, that's at no cost to you. So it's aclj.org/help. If you feel like you've got one of these kind of situations, contact us. There is no harm in contact. There's no bad contact. We want to try and assist as many people as we can on the issues that we are experts on and why the organization is created. So aclj.org/help, especially if you're out in Washington State right now and you've got kids between the age of 10 and 17. This new law there goes into effect in July, signed by your governor. If your child is a runaway, and again, not saying your child would be a runaway, but if they did run away, usually the state would contact you in 72 hours. That's the rule. Unless there's other considerations. And the other consideration would be abuse and neglect. And now they've defined abuse and neglect as not agreeing to have your minor have an abortion or to begin a gender change with medications and even surgeries. And Washington State is saying, and by the way, they'll pay for it. They'll try to reunify you with your child. But if you're against that, they're going to keep them. So go to aclj.org/help if you want to help us fight back in Washington State. Let's go to the phones, Logan.
Let's go to Julie, who's calling in Oregon on line one. Julie, welcome.
Hi, thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. Talking about the Washington State case with the Trump stickers, I'm just south of Washington in the state of Oregon, and I go to a regional park once a week, Oxbow Regional Park. And right when you come in the gate, They have an LGBTQ flag hanging there. That's the only one that's hanging there. And then as you go by the Ranger Station right on the front has all four corners of these flags, the LGBTQ flag first, the BLM flag second, the American flag next. And that's just total propaganda, just as you're coming in the gate.
You know, and what's interesting there is that you've got government speech. See, what in that case, I guarantee you the Oregon, and probably rightfully so, if those facts are just correct as they are, I don't know if what other policies the park has, yeah. But if they are, they would say, well, this is our decision as the state and as the state park system that we have a government right to speech as well. So would they then, though, apply there and tell you if you were a volunteer in that park, but you can't have a Trump sticker on your personal vehicle after you've been given an award of excellence? I mean, that does seem like it's the double standard you see. The government can push its ideas, but you just want to volunteer. You're not even trying to push your ideas. This is just what's on your personal vehicle. And that still means you have to choose between your job, a job you love, a job you've been awarded for, and your volunteer work, or your First Amendment rights. And again, someone who has been working there for over a decade, had those stickers since 2016, and someone emails in 2023 complaining that they're insurrectionist stickers, that's what starts this whole, again, unconstitutional action against our client. We are fighting back for your First Amendment rights. We are fighting back against this insane woke culture that is encouraging a 15-year-old student to read a pornographic, explicit monologue in front of her class that she didn't even write. Okay, so it's not even that situation where other students could have, you know, were complaining. She was forced to perform it. And then when she was upset about it, her mother goes to the larger school board. They only let her get about a minute in. Can we play that? Let's play that. Because, again, these are all adults. Hear how they react.
This will be horrifying for me to read to you, but that will give you perspective on how she must have felt when her teacher required her to memorize this and to act it out in front of her entire class. I don't love you. It's not you. It's just I don't like your dick or any dick in that case. I cheated, Joe.
I'm sorry.
This is propaganda.
Forgive me. Excuse me. I don't. Thank you so much for your. Thank you for your comment. Forgive me. We're not using profanity. Simply, this is a public meeting. I ask for decorum.
If you don't want me to read it to you, what was that like for my 15-year-old daughter to have to memorize pornographic material?
So there you go. One sentence, Logan. I mean, if you go to ACLJ.org, you will see
that, yeah.
That's nothing compared to what the rest of it is.
Yeah, but of course, you couldn't make it through one sentence without people starting to yell and scream in the back. And they obviously hear, we're not going to tolerate that kind of language here.
They do not want you, they don't want the public to know, including the parents, what their kids are being taught. They really don't. They shut it down. Because you know what? They're still a little embarrassed.
Oh, they got to be panicking when she starts reading those things, because it's not like anyone would want their kid doing that.
You know, you think that? But a lot of these school boards, Logan, we see the curriculum. It's pretty bad.
I think the school boards and the people at school may, but the actual parents wouldn't. They know once it's exposed that this is what's going on in your classroom.
No, so the school board tries to shut it down. Act like, move on. Thank you. Moving on. Treat her like she's some crazy person or something. She's just reading the monologue that the teacher at their school forced her daughter to perform.
Ridiculous.
We're fighting back there at ACLJ. You can learn about it at ACLJ.org. If you think you need legal help, you contact us, ACLJ.org/help. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We want to challenge that Washington state law. If you're there, if you've got children between the age of 10 and 17, we want you to contact us at ACLJ.org/help.
That's right. Reach out and go to ACLJ.org also for not only that, for incredible content. If for some reason we lose you, you're on some of the terrestrial stations, only pick up the first half hour, join us live. We got another half hour coming up. We got Mike Pompeo joining us. You're going to want to hear it. Find us broadcasting later on all the podcast feeds, as well as on all social media platforms. Search for ACLJ, Jordan Seculo. You can find us broadcasting there as well. And again, ACLJ.org. If you think that we could use our help, or if you want to support the work we're doing, we'll be right back.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever, this is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. We're going to get to a discussion about a major case, but I've got a significant announcement to make, and that is the passing of our friend, founder, and mentor, Dr. Pat Robertson. Went to be with the Lord last night, early this morning, actually. I had the chance to be with Pat about 6-8 weeks ago with our chairman of the board of Regent University, another organization that Pat had founded. We spent some time with Pat, and it was a great time to be with him. I've known Pat Robertson for most of my professional legal career. He, as I said, he founded the American Center for Law and Justice. We met at a Holiday Inn in Chesapeake, Virginia, back in 1990. I just argued the Mergens case at the Supreme Court of the United States. And Pat said, let's form an organization, which he then did. And I joined as the chief counsel. And as I said, that was, my goodness, 33, 34 years ago. And we're going to continue that legacy. But this is a man who God used tremendously, both in my life, in the life of our organization, but also globally. Operation Blessing, CBN, the 700 Club, Superbook, the list goes on and on. These were all initiatives started by Dr. Pat Robertson. His wife, Dee Dee, passed away 2 years ago. She also was a very real way, a founder of CBN and the 700 Club. That's where you all know him most, of course, is from the 700 Club. He also ran for president, credibly ran for president in 1988 as a Republican, and came number two in Iowa and a couple of the other caucuses and primary states. So he's a man that's had tremendous influence, and he's going to continue to have that influence. We're praying, of course, for his family. I know this family very well. The ministries, the activities of CBN and Regent will continue. Of course, the ACLJ, we're in court today. That work will continue, which is exactly what Pat Robertson wanted to see. His ideal was to build a legacy for generations. Christian leadership to change the world is the touchstone of Regent University. Our main focus has always been to stay in the courts and stay engaged in public policy. Pat also formed the political organization, the Christian Coalition. So you look at all of these things that Pat started and the impact they had, it changed the face of politics. I mean, most of the major newspapers and other sources that are putting out information about Pat right now are saying that he changed the political landscape in the United States, as well as touching the spiritual lives of so many people. So again, from all of us, our prayers and thoughts with the Robertson family. There'll be a celebration of life service soon. We'll keep you posted on that. And again, I can't begin to tell you the impact that Pat Robertson had on me and our organization. He was a constant source of encouragement. I mean, this tremendous insight, Yale Law School graduate. So he had a very good understanding of the law. He went into business rather than pursuing a legal degree, a law practice. He worked for investment companies and then, of course, started with $70 CBN, one radio station in Chesapeake, Virginia. And now it's a global ministry touching lives, or you can't even count the number of countries that CBN's in. But again, our work at the ACLJ was founded by this great man, and our work at the ACLJ will continue. That's what we can do for Pat. What he would say is go to court. And as I said, I was with him just a couple of weeks ago, and he was, you know, this was a guy that we were praying for him. But the last thing he asked for was, how can I pray for you? And that's how he was. That's how Pat's whole ministry was. So again, from all of us, it's a huge thank you to this man, to his vision, and a prayer specifically for his family as they continue these important ministries here in the United States and around the globe. Our friend, our mentor, our colleague, Dr. Pat Robertson, with the Lord now, passed away early this morning. And again, what a joy to be part of that team at CBN. And we appreciate so much that ministry and know it will continue. We've got some very interesting developments in a case that we're working on. We're going to get to that. But I didn't want to start this broadcast out without sending our thoughts and prayers to Pat Robertson's family as he's transitioned to heaven. We'll talk to you coming out of this break.
got students in Hunter College. It's a city university in New York. They set up a pro-life table. They go through the process called tabling. It's known in college campuses. If you attended colleges, you had this all the time. Sometimes it'd be very controversial groups. Sometimes it'd be kind of benign. And, of course, sometimes military recruiters, job recruiters. The list goes on. They set up, but a lot of times it's for on-campus organizations to recruit new members. So the pro-life group does it, Students for Life. And then a professor, who I don't know if has any connection to these students whatsoever, just sees the display and loses it on these students. I want to walk you through all of it because we haven't even played the worst part yet. I know that sounds hard after you've already seen a machete to a New York Post reporter's neck. It actually gets worse. But let's, for those people just joining us, let's show you what happened on May 2nd at Hunter College to those students at the pro-life table.
Educating. You're not educating. This is propaganda. What are you going to do, like anti-trans next? Is that what you're going to do next?
I mean, no, we're talking about abortion.
This is bull. Yeah. This is violent. You're triggering my students.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
You're not, because you can't even have a baby. So you don't even know what that is. You don't even know what this is. Get this out of here.
Notice that the students didn't push back or fight back. They let her have her rage.
They know better.
She had her violence. And guess what? The teachers union said they stood by Rodriguez against right-wing anti-abortion backlash. They said that the table and prominent banners were propagating dangerously false propaganda and that her actions to shut down the tabling were fully justified and part of a long and celebrated legacy at the CUNY schools, the CUNY schools. They also said, well, they do this to military recruiters as well, as if they're sometime, I guess, like living in like Vietnam or something like that. Okay, but then, so the video is from, that's from May 2nd. Students for Life releases the video just a couple days ago. And the New York Post reporter goes yesterday to the home of the professor, which you're able to do as a reporter. You don't have to talk to the reporter. You don't have to answer the door if you don't know who it is or if they say they're from a news organization. You can just keep your door closed. But Professor Rodriguez, she did not do that. Take a listen to what she first did.
Away from my door. Get the away from my door.
Let's get out of here. You can't do that.
Okay, and while we have time, let's like try to get a split screen of that to quick copy, because she had a machete on the neck of that reporter. A machete. That is a machete on the neck of the reporter. That's how she opened her door. Not just aggressively saying, get out, get away, which they would have done. No, no. She takes out a machete and puts it on his neck. But then it gets worse. You're starting to see, if you're watching the broadcast, it gets worse. So they leave. But what does she do? She chases him down the streets of the Bronx with a machete out, which, by the way, if law enforcement was around, could have turned into a very, very dangerous situation very quickly. Again, there's no audio on this, so for those of you listening on radio or listening to the podcast, she is chasing them down with a machete in the public streets of the Bronx. Public streets of the Bronx, full speed running.
With a machete.
Now, ultimately here, she does get fired. It took a lot. She had to turn over the students' table. She had to then put
Which
a machete
they
on
They said that was
right,
fine.
She wasn't going to get fired for that.
No.
So that's what we're pointing out. That professor wasn't even put on leave for destroying a student group's setup that they had absolute authority to be there. So we're in contact now, the ACLJ, with the organization to make sure if they need any legal assistance, because it's that two-tiered legal system where ultimately the school only had to act because she literally took out a machete and chased, put one on a reporter's neck. So that's a major crime right there. And then went into the public streets brandishing a machete, chasing people down the streets as if she was going to use it, which could result in the loss of life or serious bodily harm. Imagine if that woman ended up being shot by police, and then we would have a whole mess, right? But I guess thankfully in that situation, there weren't police there in that part of New York at the time, because you saw that, Logan, you'd probably shoot her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's we have a call actually asking that specific question. Can we go to Jerry, who's calling in Rhode Island? Jerry, you're on the air.
Hello, folks. I did see the video. I did not know the time between May 2nd and the machete incident. It sounds like she was fired as a result of machetes, but based on that, that's assault with a deadly weapon in public with a video. Has that woman been arrested?
Not at this time, because it's New York, and she's a liberal activist. Now, ultimately, again, we want to get involved here. We can't get someone arrested. It's not what the ACLJ's job is. Those are prosecutors' jobs. I'd have to look more into the DA's office in the Bronx. We know that, you know, if it's in Manhattan, it wouldn't be very good. It
certainly should happen.
But yes. I mean, I would hope that if it doesn't matter what your skin color is, what your politics is, if you chase down someone with the street with a machete and actually put it to their neck, you are going to be arrested and charged and likely convicted of some crime. And by the way, you're probably not the right kind of person to be in a university setting teaching young people who, yes, are adults, but do not sign up to go to school to be harassed and defamed and attacked physically as they were by having their having what was on their table pushed into them. I mean, there's crime after crime after crime after crime committed, and it literally took a liberal school, Logan. Liberal school. It took a professor threatening to kill someone.
Right. Not
before
even just
they would
violence.
Take action.
Not even just violence. Not even just disruption. You're talking about on camera, a professor at one of these colleges, because of the fact, remember what the originating fact is. Originating fact is she didn't care for the fact that there was a pro-life table supporting essentially like a students for life type situation, not necessarily students for life, but in that kind of vein, it may have been. And then when a reporter approached her, because she destroyed their table, ripped off all the stuff. When a reporter approached her, it was Students of Life, or for Life of America. When they approached her, at her home, knocked on the door, which, by the way, happens to a lot of people when the press is trying to get a statement from you, whether you like that or not, just what happens. Instead of ignoring the door, instead of yelling, hey, go away, I'm not going to talk to you, or no comment, opens the door, pretty much says, I'm not going to be talking to go away, and then grabs a machete and pushes it towards someone's throat. They leave, and on the way out, she thought, you know what? That's not enough. I'm going to chase this person down. And that third final act of aggression, all based on the fact that she destroyed a pro-life student group's table of brochures, was enough to finally get her fired. But still, not quite arrested, not quite really having justice served just yet. But hopefully, we're going to get involved in that.
Yes, it's Hunter College says she has been relieved of her duties at Hunter College effective immediately, and will not be returning to teach at the school. But what else will she be returning to do?
Yeah, obviously they're very careful in the way they word things. So that's a...
Listen, they're in a situation, they got to fire someone. I understand that. They have to go through that process.
Never fun.
Never fun and never easy. But she should have been fired the moment she attacked the students at the... at least put on a long-term leave and investigation done. Because if she's treating students like that at a public setting on campus where they are legally there to table for a political cause she might not believe in, but she can't attack them physically. She could get into a discussion with them, but she can't curse at them, push them, throw their table back at them and their materials back at them. That alone should have been enough. It shouldn't have taken a machete incident. I mean, how crazy is it that we're saying that? A machete incident to have her relieved of her duties as a teacher. I have a feeling she ends up somewhere inside the
system,
education system there. It's huge. She just might not be a professor for a few years while this has got attention on it. That's why we want to get involved with the ACLJ. We're working on, we don't just talk about these issues. We always try to find ways that we can assist those who have been wronged. The first group who was wronged here was those students on campus. And think about how this silences speech on campus. If this could happen to you, and then you see these teachers are crazy enough to pull out a knife, a machete, are you just going to shut up in class? It has the effect, which is a First Amendment issue, of silencing and freezing out speech, which is the opposite of what college is supposed to be about.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, I'd love to hear from you. There's a lot of calls coming in at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We'll get to some of those coming up. We'll also... continue on the discussion. We only have about a minute and a half, so why don't we save Steve? We'll save you for the next segment or two. But we are going to take some mini calls. So give us a call at 1-800-684-3110 and continue talking about some of the other ways that the ACLJ is getting involved coming up in the next segment.
Yeah, absolutely right. There's an attack by the Biden administration on so many of the cases we've won and victories we've had and laws on the books to make it clear about, you know, like Bible clubs on campus and student religious freedom on campus. And they have started wiping those from the Federal Register. So we're going to talk to Abby Sutherland, senior counsel with the ACLJ, about that, but also a victory we had in a similar situation. A student, I mean, it still happens where a student brings a Bible to school and gets told by the school, to take that Bible home. You can't have that here. It's still something we deal with since our founding of the ACLJ and that we're dealing with in 2023. If anything like this has happened to you, and it doesn't have to be as extreme as a machete incident, for goodness sakes, but the Bible, you know, being told you can't bring your Bible to school, or having your tabling destroyed at a college campus by someone who works for the college, you need to contact us so we can represent you and make that wrong right. So you contact us at aclj.org/help. When you fill out the information, you will be contacted by an ACLJ attorney. And of course, we do all this work for free because of our donors. Donate today at aclj.org. Welcome back to Secula. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. We'll go to Marianne first out of Washington State online too. Hey, Marianne.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you.
A couple of comments that I had to make. Number one, I'm a supporter of what you do, and I have used you in the past, and that's been really great. That state park they were talking about is one of our favorite places to go and to camp. And we have loved that place for years. So it's just irritating as all get out to hear that. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because it's a policy. Listen, when Gary, our client, Gary Formals, signed the policy, it reads as public contact and communication. The way he read it and the way they read it at the time, because he had the stickers on since 2016 and he won the Award of Excellence in 2019, and it wasn't until someone complained via email in 2023, a few weeks ago, that he was told to take the stickers off or quit. So basically fired. That was for public contact and communication. That's like if you're going to be in a park outfit or uniform, you're not going to express your personal political views. That's normal, and he was never accused of doing that. Also, if you're going to a park, if you're driving a park vehicle, not your own private vehicle, but a park vehicle, you're going to slap a political sticker on there. That would be, again, normal. That's normal in that kind of position. But it's like when you drive to go work for the federal government in your vehicle, that's one thing. You know, if you go drive to work at the state, if you, it is so. Again, the policy that they're saying he violated. They only determined he violated 10 years into his service with the park. And the initial folks there, when they first got this email, said, I don't think there's anything wrong here. This is his personal vehicle, you know, that he parks and backs in. And people came in. It's like someone had to go out of their way.
This just happens when there's one complaint.
Someone went out of their way to call him an insurrectionist. This is a person who is a military veteran who volunteers his time to take care of a park, which is obviously, as we heard from listeners, a beloved place for people.
Already being a hostile response, not a, hey, you know, I don't really like that there's political speech going on here. You know, I feel like we're in a public place, you know, or public park employees. Maybe it's not that. It's calling someone insurrectionist right up front. You know where they're coming from. You can imagine who this person is in your head, you know, who got this angry over a couple bumper stickers. Let's go ahead and keep the phones going. Let's go to Peter, who's calling in Alaska on line one. Hey, and if you want to call in, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We got about 5 minutes until the end of the show, so you got a little bit of time to get your call in right now. Peter, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. And my concern is about the child that had to read the pornographic material. And I was wondering what the teachers and people are teaching our children that they're thinking that, I mean, whoever wrote the material thought it was okay that they did that. So something's being taught. So that's my concern. And
you know, it's interesting, Peter. In this case, one of the teacher's first responses was that, well, I actually edited this to make it less bad,
less graphic.
That it was even worse. And that was their response. Well, it was even worse. But I think you make a good point. The teacher didn't pull this from the hat and say, wait, this goes way over the broad, because even if you said the students could be very creative on their own, I'm not going to make another student randomly have to perform this. This is something, again, that would a lot of people would not only face public embarrassment, but like emotional distress, which are real violations of law here when we talk about that, putting someone, especially a minor, in that kind of situation. So a teacher could have said, even if they hadn't been clear, you know what, this is not right for this exercise that we're doing, so I'm going to take this out. In fact, they thought they needed to edit it, so they were halfway there. But then when the teacher knew that the student was upset, they end up against, by the way, the student's request, forcing her in a room with the teacher one-on-one, and the teacher assaults.
Male teacher.
Yeah, grabs her.
You got to be clear also.
We're talking about a 15-year-old kid.
You got to be also, as a parent, very vigilant of what your kid's homework is, what they're coming home with. Ask those questions, have those conversations, because this is an awkward, especially if you read this speech, this would be awkward for anyone to even read with their parent.
Oh, yeah.
Bravo to this student who actually brought this up to their parent, because I think a lot of them would have just done it and just said, you know what, I don't want to talk to my parent about this. This is super awkward. This is very uncomfortable. Good for them for standing up. Let's go continue the phone calls. Let's go to Justin, who's calling in the state of Virginia. You're on the air. Commonwealth.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Not to sound lacking in compassion here, but just to switch subjects real quick. Why do we feel as though we owe illegal immigrants, anything, shouldn't the onus be on the Mexican government to help handle this situation, at least? It seems like it's pretty simple to figure out, but I don't know why it's so complicated.
Yeah, well, it is simple to, how do you prevent illegal immigration? You build the wall, you spend more on border enforcement and technology, you make it more difficult to cross illegally. And you don't have policies, which, by the way, a judge, so don't let this one fool you, because it wasn't the Biden administration who wanted this. A federal judge late on Friday night said, by the way, you can't just let people out without a court date. If you're going to let them out with asylum claim, you have to give them a court date. So not just randomly let into the country. That was a district court judge. We'll see if that decision holds. I'm sure the Biden administration is going to challenge that. They wanted to just let people out and say, at some point in time, we're going to let you know when you've got a court date. And we'll tell you when and where to show up. Like, people are going to do that a decade from now, or they're even going to be able to keep track of them a decade from now. So that's one of the issues, is just a failure in doing what we know we could do to make it much more difficult to cross illegally. And then I think you get to the second part. Illegal immigrants, you know what they're owed is to be returned to their last, to either their country of origin or the last place they were. Now, a lot of these immigrants are not Mexican. They are utilizing Mexico to cross the southern border. But they represent 121 different countries. So there are problems all the way down throughout South America. There are people flying in. If you're from Haiti and you got to Mexico, okay, you were traveling either by boat or air to somehow get to the U.S. southern border to cross in illegally to the United States. And there's groups of Haitian migrants. And listen, if you have a legitimate asylum claim, there's a way to do that. And if you cross into a bunch of countries that you're no longer in danger of, guess what? You're not supposed to be able to make that claim in the country that you just want to be in. It's the country that you're safe in. And so there's issues there. So we don't have to have this problem.
Yeah, when there's hundreds of thousands of people, though, coming in, you also have to not just ignore it and say, well, it was on them. I think that's one of the things you brought up. Is like, why, we have to figure out a solution to this. Also, I think one of the lies that's been told very much is that conservatives are not in favor of legal immigration. They kind of make it as a racist statement, saying
it's impossible to have people immigrate legally, right? Because there's no space for them. So the people who have been waiting in line for years, if not a decade, who are going through the process legally,
sorry,
they are the ones who are being hurt the most, because the people are illegally jumping the line and taking their place in a country where they have gone through the process to get here legally. We want you to support the work of the ACLJ. We just talked about two of our cases we just filed late Friday and last week. When we represent those clients too, those are the ones that are brave and they're standing up for all of our rights. That people say, I'm not going to take this. I'm going to contact the ACLJ. So if you've got a similar situation, contact us at aclj.org/help. You don't find yourself in Washington State, you've got a kid between the age of 10 and 17, contact us at aclj.org/help. And we can do this work because of our donors. You can donate today at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.